A lot of people use racing as like motivation to train for something, but I have like this internal motivation where I wake up every morning and I run 10K, whether I'm racing or I'm planning on sitting on the couch the rest of the day, right? So as of right now, my goals are kind of having some of those nice in the moment days in the mountains.
That was Patrick Seymour, and this is episode 147 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life. Patrick Seymour is a 39-year-old oil and gas engineer, mountain runner, and proud father of two boys. He lives in Bray Creek, a quaint little town surrounded by provincial parks, mountains, and trails not far from Calgary, Alberta. Like a true Canadian kid, he has spent his fair share of time on the ice playing hockey, but over the last few years has found he has a natural ability to move efficiently in mountainous terrain. All one has to do is check out his Instagram feed to understand why he has become a mountain running explorer, as it's filled with stunning summit pics, rugged ridgelines, mountain meadows and lakes, and the odd Pepsi. In this episode, we talk about Patrick's running origin story, what a perfect running day looks like for him, how running has helped his mental health, and what he has learned about himself over the last several years through running. Let's meet Patrick. So Patrick, welcome to the Inspired Souls podcast. We're really happy to have you on the show tonight, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just jump right in there to tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? Where are you coming to us, you know, from? And what do you do with your days?
I am currently living in Bray Creek. I'm from just north Edmonton. Moved down here with my family. I guess we didn't have a family when I first moved down here, but my wife and I moved out to Bray Creek kind of after right in around when we bought a house and decided that's about when I decided I was going to start running. But my days are basically filled with parenting, working. Yeah. I'm an oil and gas engineer and running. I do a ton of running and climbing mountains. So.
Okay. Well, you live in a perfect place to do that. I moved to Calgary, yeah. Fun fact, when I moved to Calgary, I was shopping for houses and I was triangulating distances from the school where the boys were going to go to school to my work, my new job, and to Bray Creek. And my realtor was like, "You care more about the distance to the mountains than you do about work and school." And I'm like, "That's right. Mountains will never move. Schools will move. Jobs will move. Mountains will always be exactly where they are right now." And so I did. I bought a house as close to 22X as I could get. But you went one step further. And live in the awesome town of Bray Creek. So why is this important? What's so special about Bray Creek? Tell us about this.
You know, it's funny. My aunt and uncle lived out here my whole life. And, you know, mountains have been a big part of my childhood growing up. It was a big part of our family. You know, my grandpa and grandma we live North Edmonton, and my aunt living in Bray Creek, we used to actually drive through Jasper to get to her house. So very, you know, we would drive significantly out of the way to, you know, go through the mountains. And it was a passion of my grandparents was always to go through the mountains. And, you know, when I was living in Edmonton, going to school, and then I came down to Calgary for work. And after meeting my now wife, they moved from Westlock, from my town I grew up in, to Bray Creek. And after meeting my now wife, we both lived in Calgary. And, you know, it was one time we were actually just driving out to my mom and dad's house, and we just said, "Hey, we'll stop out there and look at a house." And we just saw the neighborhood and the trees, and we just kind of fell in love there. So kind of interesting in the sense that I was always kind of more into football and the team sports and things growing up. And I actually, when I first moved to Bray Creek, running wasn't even on the radar. And I was working in oil and gas, and I had a bunch of people buying me lunch every day and put on a bunch of weight. And I was almost significantly overweight. And I was actually, for a good friend of mine was a quarterback in the CFL, and him and I were just practicing before his training camp. And he kind of looked at me and he's like, "You can't run more than 10 yards without being out of breath. Like, you need to lose weight." Yeah. And he kind of laid the gauntlet down on me there. And I'd been driving, commuting back and forth from Calgary, and I'd always see Bannon Peak in the distance every day. And I would just, you know, I kind of just said to myself, you know what? I love the mountains. You know, I always just look at the mountains. I don't do a ton of running or, you know, hiking or anything like that. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start running. You know, I'm just going to try this. I'm going to lose some weight. I'm just going to try running. And anybody that knows me knows that I'm not the type of person to just set a goal and just be like, oh, you know, let's just see how this running thing goes. I am very militaristic in the sense that when I set a goal, that is now my life. I am doing anything I can to work towards that goal. So I started out probably like a lot of people where we have a dog and he was one year old at the time, boxer, and he had a ton of energy. So, you know, I'd literally run, you know, 100 meters and then walk, you know, for a kilometer. And then I'd run 100 meters and then I'd walk. And I just played this game in my head where I'd go 100 meters and I'd say, well, you can go another 100 meters. So I'd pick points where I'm like, okay, just run to that point before you stop. And next thing you knew it, I was, we're actually just outside of Bread Creek in Redwood Meadows at the time. And they have a really good trail network in the, by the river. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to start running. There's a little 5K loop, and being militaristic like I am, I just, okay, I'm doing the 5K loop every day. And so I just started doing the 5K loop every day. And then I started to lose weight. I, you know, obviously was eating better with all of that. And I ended up losing 60 pounds. And all of a sudden I became a runner. And it was always funny because my wife would always laugh at me because I'd see runners in minus 30 and I'd be driving along being like, look at these guys. Like, come on, look at them in their spandex running around on the roads. Like, why not just get a vehicle? It's so much easier. And then all of a sudden, you know, two, three years later, I'm now the one that I'll run in minus 40. I'll run in minus 50, right? Like I don't miss a day running when, you know, when it's on my mind. So yeah, eventually it just became something where when we had our first son with Cohen, well, I guess, no, I had already had Cohen when I started running. Sorry, he was very young, but as he started going to school and things, I didn't have as much time. So I started waking up at 3:30 in the morning, driving into the city. And then I started running in the city. So as much as I call myself a trail runner and I kind of say, oh, those road runners looking at their watch and always worried about pace, probably 70% of my runs are actually on the road and at a faster pace. So I don't admit that to many people, but I guess I just did.
That's the reality of trail runners, especially when you live near big mountains. You literally don't have the time to always be going up a mountain, right? Like if you want to get the miles in or you want to get some like turnover, you have to run on the roads. It's a dirty little secret of us mountain trail runners. But I want to stop for a moment. And I just did a little, wait a minute. He's talking about, he lives in West Bragg Creek, gets up at 3:30 in the morning to run, to drive into the city to do his runs. I can't tell you how many times I've done the exact opposite. I've gotten up in the city to drive to the mountains to do my runs. But yeah, talk to us a little bit about that. So that was basically just how you were able to fit it into your day and your busy family schedule.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was just a factor of, you know, me just realizing that there's no way that I'm going to be able to be running, trail running out in Bread Creek. I had to get into work early, into the office early, drop my stuff off, go for a quick run. And then I definitely, you know, the days I work from home are definitely trail runs in Bread Creek. It's just not, it's not my primary. As funny as it is, like everybody looks at me, they see a trail runner, but at the end of the day, most of my mileage is actually, you know, on the road. So yeah, I know I hate to admit it. And now a bunch of people heard it, but there it is. I am a road/trail run. That hurt to say, but there it is.
Well, you're the perfect person for this podcast, though. We can both relate to you. But I think it's really interesting. So you basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, you picked up running to essentially prove a point to your football friend that you could run more than 10 yards. And then at some point you found yourself in minus 50 in the spandex. And so I'm wondering, at what point along that continuum did you actually begin to identify as a runner?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I've never really, because at first I was identified as just somebody that was going to lose weight. Like it wasn't even about running, right? It was just to get in shape. And
it was a means to an end.
Right. And again, just with my militaristic drive, I was like, okay, if it takes running a bunch, I'm going to do it, you know? And, When did I identify as a runner? Actually, this is an easy question. This is, I actually got laid off from my job in 2015. And I was very much, I identified 100% by my job. You know, I was like, okay, this is what makes me is this job. And I actually was very hung up on the fact I had lost this job. And I went to a therapist and she's like, hey, you know, you identify by your job. You're a father, you're a runner, and you had this job, but now you don't have that job, but you're still a father and a runner. And I kind of looked at that and said, you know what? It's actually, it took a while to realize it, obviously, but I was like, oh, you know, so that's kind of when I really took off with it. And it became while I was off in my downtime, because, you know, my son was going to school, I basically just ran. And it was probably the best year of my life outside of the anxiety of, you know, if I was out running, I had this thought that, oh, you need to be applying for jobs. Right, and right. If I was at home applying for jobs, I was like, oh, you need to be climbing a mountain somewhere, right? So it was a strange pull in either direction. But I think that's kind of the year where it really took off. And I did a lot of races and stuff that year, and I was in really good shape. I had some success in some races. And it just, I think that's when I kind of identified as a runner. But to be honest with you, I still don't know if I identify as a runner. Like people, you know, if they tell me, hey, you know, you're a runner, I'm inspired by what you do, I'm always like, what? Like, why? What? I don't really do anything, you know, like I'm just a guy that goes out and runs every once in a while, right? So, but yeah, I guess if to answer your question, it probably would have been after losing my job.
Yeah. And that's so funny because we can swing from this polar opposite of like, I identify so strongly as a runner to like, am I really a runner at all? Like you could kind of just go to either extreme very easily. But on that note, describe to us kind of like what would be your perfect dream running day? Like if you could just have an entire day to do whatever it is that you want, at what adventure would you seek?
You know, it's funny you say, like, I think my dream day is basically, you know, I have a pretty good group of friends that I get out with. You know, I think the dream day is just that day where, you know, I don't have any anxiety about getting back and I just enjoy where I'm at. You know, obviously it's going to be, you know, out somewhere beautiful, but, you know, it's more in my head where I'm just those days that I'm just relaxed and I'm like, I'm in the moment. And as a lot of the people that run with me know, like there's a lot of times where I'm just not in the moment. I'm not living in the moment, right? So I guess specifically, I don't know if I can give you a specific run. Like I've had some epic days that I'll never forget, but I think it's just those days where, you know, I'm just, it's either just me or it's just one of the, you know, a group or what, whoever's with me, but I'm just in the moment, living in that moment.
Oh man, what you just said just hit me, you know, as a parent with my kids are getting older now, but for so many years, it was really about getting back, making sure I was back for breakfast, making sure I was back for lunch, making sure I wasn't missing out on this sporting event. And when, yeah, those days where you can just relax and just be there and not think about what's happening in the next hour are, you know, so special.
Gifts. Yeah. And it's hard to, like, because it happens to all of us. It's like you get in this flow state and here we are in the moment and we're not wishing we were elsewhere or thinking about, Kim, who did we just have on? I think it was Robin Penner, and her thing was be where your feet are. It's very easy to say and very hard to do, to be exactly where you are and not wishing you were somewhere else or thinking you should be somewhere else. Do you have any sense of what leads to that state for you? Like what kind of circumstances have to conspire for you to be where your feet are?
You know, it's all in my brain. I mean, I think we just kind of mentioned before we came on here, definitely I'm starting to learn a lot more about the mental health side and, you know, being diagnosed this past year with ADHD. The short answer to your question. So my wife is great. I mean, my wife would let me go do whatever I want. You know, I got the kids, you go do your thing. She's a very avid mountain biker. You go do your thing. I got the kids. You go do your thing. I got the kids. But it's my own brain, right? I mean, I feel like I need to have all this stuff organized for her. Like, oh, you know, Jasper, our youngest, he's going here. And Cohen, our oldest, he's going to hockey here. And I got him lined up with it. And she's just like, okay, just go enjoy the time. And it's just a matter of me and my own brain just realizing that, you know, I'm not need it in that situation. You know, I can just go and enjoy it. You know, and I'm not going to say it's few and far between, but, you know, it's, again, I have a very good group of people I get out with, and, you know, they definitely help to, to ease my mind and help me realize, hey, you know, stay in the moment. So
that's great. Okay. So tell me about any special running traditions you might have. And I understand Pepsi might be a little bit a part of this. So is there anything that you like to do as part of a, you know, your running experience that tends to come up repeatedly?
Okay. Yeah. So the Summit Pepsi, I'm sure, is what you're talking about there.
So yes, that's what I'm talking about.
It was actually when I was doing the 100 miler for WAM out at Whistler Alpine Meadows there, the 100 miler, you know, Joanna Ford, one of the girls I run with, she's very an advocate. She's one of my, we call her our trail mom. So she's always teaching me, you know, kind of how to fuel. And one thing I really realized is I do well with sugar, you know, like for me, like Coca-Cola, you know, Sour Patch Kids, Oreos, things like that. Like, you know, quick calories I do well with. I don't do well with any of the sugar-free stuff. And I eat like a child. I mean, I'll just throw that out there. And I have a 10-year-old's dream diet. But the Coke thing started in Whistler, you know, and at each aid station, I'd be drinking a Coca-Cola. I found that it was really good. You know, I like the fizz. I like the calories and everything
liquid
like that.
Liquid gold. Yeah.
So basically my thing was I'd start when anytime I'd climb up a mountain, I'd have a Pepsi or a Coca-Cola, sorry, at the top. So I started tagging them kind of as a joke, like Joanna used to do it with Oreos. You know, we'd have our Summit Oreos and we tag Oreo. So I kept tagging Coke kind of as a joke. And a friend of mine actually worked for Pepsi and I have him on Instagram and he's like, look, you know, I talked to my buddy and if you start tagging Blue Pepsi on your photos, they'll just start sending you Pepsi. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. So I started tagging Pepsi and they reached out to me. And the next thing I know, they're just sending me cases of Pepsi. So now every time I climb a mountain, I'll drink a Pepsi. So it's interesting. I mean, it's funny how it came about
you
like
sold
that.
Out. And you sold out.
That's right. I did. I actually, you know what? I actually, if I were to buy Coke or Pepsi, I don't drink much of it. It's funny because I actually don't drink much of it when I'm not running or climbing mountains. It's not something I would drink, but obviously in that scenario, because I don't do gels or anything like that, right? So I'll just climb up to the top of the mountain and have a Pepsi. So
well, there is something about that cold, and you mentioned Coke. Like I don't drink Coke at any other time other than during typically a hot ultra. And it's just, it's the only thing you want. Like that will get me 5 miles to an aid station thinking about the Coke. I don't know what it is about Coke or Pepsi. Okay. So you gave us a little bit of an insight into some of the type of races that you have done. Let's go there for a moment. Like you mentioned starting out running, trying to run 10 yards and all of a sudden you're doing WAM 100 like several years later. So talk to us about the progression of your running evolution.
Yeah, I guess that it is kind of an interesting story in the sense where, you know, I never really wanted to be a racer. I mean, I know I'm a pretty competitive guy. And I think the biggest thing with me that I'm starting to realize, I really care what people think of me, right? So I hate putting myself out there and potentially starting a race and not finishing as well as I want to, you know? So I think that everybody's kind of looking at me like, oh, can you believe he didn't do that well? So racing to me was always a kind of a scary thought. It was crazy. Like when I first started running and kind of getting into the trail thing and the mountain thing, like I'd see people that would do 30 kilometer days and I'd just be like, wow, I will never be able to do that. Like that is something so far out of my realm, but that's awesome. These people are inspiring me to do this. Like maybe I'll be there one day, you know? And so when I started kind of on the trails, living this close to Moose Mountain, I think it was the Moose Mountain Marathon they were having. And I just kind of on a whim, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to sign up for this and see how it goes. And I signed up for the, I can't even remember the distance. It's the one that's straight up and down. It doesn't do the loop. I think it might be 30 kilometers or something in around there. And I entered it and I did pretty well. And it was funny because, you know, it's these guys that are wearing like their singlets and short shorts. And I remember I did it with an old school Camelback filled with like a 2-liter bladder of water. And it's, which is crazy because I actually don't drink a lot of water when I run, but I'm still, you know, I got this like winterish coat on and long shorts and this Camelback. And like thinking back on it, it's actually pretty humorous because you know, you get these guys that are ready to race, and I just kind of show up like I'm, you know, inexperienced runner that I am running out on Bragging Rights Merlin and West Bragg, right? So I did well in that race, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, that's kind of encouraging. We'll see how this goes. And I think the next year I signed up for the Powderface 42, and believe it or not, I actually won it that year. I mean, it was, I had a good day. I won it that year. And oh, sorry, I did Grizzly the year before. I did the Grizzly 50. Same thing, you know, lined up with a bunch. And that's very much a roadrunner race too. So everybody's, you know, in their short shorts and singlets. Right. And I showed up in that same big jacket with the Camelback, and not realizing there's an aid station every 5 kilometers. So I didn't need to carry 2 liters of water on my back. And again, like I'm not going to say, well, I think I might have finished top 10. Like it was a good race, you know, all in all, it went well. And the next year I signed up for the Powderface 42 and the Rut that year. And that was the year I actually got laid off work, and I had been training a lot. I actually ended up winning the Powderface 42 and doing fairly well in the Rut. And so it's kind of 50K. Here I am. I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to run 50K. And the next thing I know, I'm racing 50 kilometers. And, it, you know, from there, it was kind of just that 50K distance. And then I did my first 100K was at Whistler Alpine Meadows. And then the next year was the 100 miler there. And I had a good day at both those ones. And And then obviously the Minotaur races were a big part of that. I mean, that was kind of my thing, right? Like let's race up and down mountains in a course that, you know, is different all the time and you can't see it beforehand. For me, it's like, okay, it's an adventure and a race. This is perfect. You know, so I really, obviously those ones were big. And then I had a tough day in the heat at Sinister the next year. And to be honest, since then, I really haven't been, I did Minotaur last year. And other than that, racing hasn't been a thing. Like the bigger days, I think I've become a scrambler more than a runner actually, but I do a lot of running still. But just again, like those big, longer mountain days have been just really pulling me closer. But, you know, obviously I still have that itch to race, but my wife really likes it. She's really good at crewing me. So it ends up being a fun family event. I remember Whistler, it was about, I think it was about 10 or 11 at night. My 5-year-old was 2 and a stroller. She was pushing a stroller with my big bag with all my stuff in it up halfway up Whistler Mountain, you know, with Cohen in her arm. It was funny, like pulling up and seeing the commitment that she put into that. So, you know, she's really actually inspired me to want to race more just because she enjoys it too, right? She enjoys that aspect. But
That's the like holy grail is finding a partner that likes to crew for you.
she enjoys it. It definitely. But yeah, I think what I struggle with is a lot of people use racing as like motivation to train for something. But I have like this internal motivation where I wake up every morning and I run 10K, whether I'm racing or I'm planning on sitting on the couch the rest of the day. Right. So it's not really as big for me, but you know, with that said, I definitely have some races that I would love to do, but I just, as of right now, my goals are kind of just having some of those nice relaxing, some of those nice in the moment days in the mountains. So,
well, you're talking kind of there about it's interesting. You get into it, you know, you get start to do some races, and there's sounds like maybe a bit of beginner's luck there. You just sort of show up inexperienced on the start line and get a top 10 finish and eventually win one. And, you know, that can be kind of addicting to keep going back and see how, you know, if you can improve on that. But we're equally curious about the challenging times, the struggles. Like, I wonder if there's anything that stands out to you about any race or event that you've done where, you know, you got into trouble or you really struggled to get through it and how you overcame.
Oh yeah. No, I definitely, you know, I have had a lot of that. I mean, you know, some of the shorter distances, I really haven't had those type of days. You know, the 100 miler at Sinister, I mean, I could talk for hours about that. That was a tough day. Whistler, you know, obviously looking back on it, that was a hard day or days. That was almost 30 hours, I think. you know, but at the end of the day, I have a really good friend, Chris Aubrey, and he helped me so much that I honestly can't even remember. I was just so happy to finish and just to do it all with him. Like, the biggest thing with me is I'm a very social runner. Like, I talked to Chris for 30 hours, you know, and him and I didn't run out of anything to talk about. Like, we wow. literally had a 30-hour conversation, right? And, you know, obviously there were parts in between where we weren't talking. I mean, he definitely, I always laugh, he was calling. Well, I was struggling there. But, yeah, we were getting close to the end of the race, and my watch died, and he was calling out every quarter mile. And oh, that my. Was not great because, yeah, I think it was 107 or 108 miles total, and we kind of got to that 100-mile mark, and he was like, okay, 101, 101.25, you know, oh, but my. He, you know, like, yeah, and so anyways, no, so I don't really remember a lot of the struggles with Whistler. I remember where there was a storm coming, and we were just racing that storm, and, you know, I think we were 105 miles in, and he just kind of looked at me like, hey, we finished, and I just remember the emotion of being like, what, like, really? And then we ran so fast mm-hmm. to the end, I think it was probably... Yeah, I mean, we were doing like 5-minute kilometers to finish off the last 4 kilometers wow. after running 105 miles, right? Like, it was, yeah, it was an interesting end of the race. But no, Sinister, I mean, I struggled. I quickly realized that a lot of the training that I do, because I get out early in the morning, so if I go for a run by myself, I try to go for sunrise. Whether sunrise is at 5 a.m. or it's at 7 a.m., I try to get out in the morning so that I have the rest of the day to hang out with the family. So I quickly realized, I think, that I'm not very good in heat. And apparently Sinister is well known for the heat. And me thinking, okay, I've done 100 miles before. You know, Whistler was considered a hard 100 miler, you know, with a bunch of elevation. I should be fine. Like, they had 8,000 meters elevation gain at Whistler. You know, Sinister doesn't have that much. I should be okay. Totally not thinking that Whistler was at the end of September. So
right.
very high up, like in the mountains, right? Where Sinister, it gets hot. And
it gets really hot.
I remember I was in, I think they call it Satan's Sack, like 3. And I was cramping like crazy. And actually, of all people, Joanna Ford, my guardian angel, she runs up behind me and she's like, hey, you need salt. So she gave me a salt tablet. And, you know, I was okay for a bit. And then I got into the aid station. I got such bad cramping. Like, it felt like my muscles were going to explode in my legs. Like, I actually did ask the physio guy if it was possible for a muscle to explode because it hurt so bad. It was contracting. And, you know, they kind of just told me, okay, you need salt. And again, I think I may have alluded to this, but it was so bad. Like, my cramping was so bad. I'd go over a hill and my leg would lock. And I know at one point I couldn't get my leg back down. So I just fell over. And, you know, like, I was feeling my jaw locking on me just from cramping. And it wasn't great. But me being the perennial overdoer of things, I get done that leg. I spent probably an hour and a bit at the aid station. They just kept telling me salt, 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 salt. And I was like, okay. So I was feeling good. I remember I kind of told my wife, I'm not going back out. And then I was in the aid station for an hour. And I just looked at her. I was like, okay, get my shoes. And she's like, for what? And I was like, okay, I'm going to go back out on leg 4. So I went out on leg 4. And it was going good till it was really smoky and hot. And so I just thought, okay, salt. I need salt. I saw a guy behind me and I was like, hey, do you have any salt? And he has a Ziploc bag of salt. And instead of just, like, you know, trying to mix some salt into my water, I just basically ate that whole bag of salt. And that was kind of the end of my day. I think after that point, I was kind of like, okay, that's it. And yeah. So, and then I got into the aid station there and it was probably the hardest thing I did, but I ended my day there.
Okay. So what year was this? Was this 2021?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So 2021. Yeah. I was at Sinister that year. I did the 50 miler and I remember I had even heat trained in Winnipeg. Remember that was the hot, hot summer we had right before I moved, Carolyn? Like, I'd done training runs in massive heat. But they had recorded at some of the aid stations temperatures of like 38 degrees in, you know, leg 4. It was a hot, hot year. And I remember just coming up to creeks and just laying down in with my feet in the air, trying to keep my feet dry and like getting my whole core as cold as possible. Yeah. It was not a joke. It was actually dangerously hot that year. So yeah, I don't know, you know, even with the perfect heat training, I think anybody would have suffered in that race. It was not an easy day. And yeah, I remember thinking about, oh man, I'm only doing 50. What about those people that are trying to do 100 today? There was a lot of attrition that day. So, you know, is there anything you took away from that? Is there anything you've applied differently since then? Or was it just it was what it was. It was just one of those days and let's just move on.
You know, I definitely learned a lot of lessons. I haven't tried 100 miles again, so I haven't been able to apply them. Basically, I just run before the sun comes up. And I honestly do have some ideas. I'm not good at drinking water. I'm not good at hydrating properly. You know, I don't have a water sponsorship. It's just Pepsi, right? So I can't, you know, until I start getting that. But honestly, I'm very bad at, you know, fueling properly and hydrating in the hot, when it's hot. I don't like eating when it's hot. I struggle with that. I think anybody that's ever gone for a run with me will speak, like, they'll be down in, again, like t-shirts and shorts, and I'll still have like a coat on. And I just kind of sweat through it. I've just never been good at that. So just heat in general, I know going into, if it's going to be 100 mile in the summer, I'm going to have to train for heat. And that's just what I'm going to have to do. Yeah.
And it's really hard to do here in Alberta when it doesn't get hot, like really hot typically until the end of May. And then all of a sudden you've got race season, the high country just melts, boom, it's hot. And we're up there. You know, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, Carolyn, you know, we sign up for these races. Even Boston comes for roadrunners really early to be running if you live in Canada when you've been training in, you know, snowdrifts and ice, and all of a sudden you're down in Boston and it could be maybe only 20 degrees, but that's hot when you've been training in 10. Yeah. So, exactly. It's one of those variables that makes running interesting.
Exciting. All the time. But it's also true, I think, that we learn through contrast, right? And those really great races, you come to appreciate them more when you have those races that are challenging, right? When
those
you
days.
Have the, yeah. And so I think it's not the worst thing to come up on a day that isn't your day, or the really hot and, oh, guess what? I'm not that great in the heat or whatever. I think that just ends up, well, I'll ask you, does it end up making you appreciate the good days when they do come even more?
Yeah, I would say yes. I do have a problem though with, you know, even after getting done Whistler, people be like, oh my God, that's amazing. I could never do that. And I'd be like, yeah, no, you could do it. Like it was nothing. But then on the day like Sinister, I beat myself up forever for that. Right. Like I don't spend enough time, I don't think, appreciating the good days. But I get where you're coming from. I do agree with you, but at the same time, just the way my brain works, I never really allow myself to really see it as an accomplishment, you know, or that I had a good day. So yeah, it's kind of I get where you're coming from. And I think I do share that sentiment, but it's just, I'm not quite there yet, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's back to the be where your feet are. Like, yes. Learn to appreciate the struggles as much as the good times. So why don't we go there then? You mentioned earlier, like you suffer with anxiety, ADHD, you've seen a therapist at different points. Like, tell us how you got diagnosed with ADHD and how does running kind of factor into your treatment plan for that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I know it's a thing that I've always known that I have, you know, like it's always funny because people be like, oh my God, I got such terrible ADHD or ADD. And I'm like, I don't even think, you know, like I can't sit still. I can't not fidget. Like I can't not move. Right. So basically So I was seeing a therapist more about, as I started to learn more about myself and my fear of, like just my perception of people, right? I guess it's not really a fear, but just I'm overly conscious of what people think, right? And so I started talking to her about that. And the therapist I was seeing, just she's unreal. She used to be the head of the ADHD department for Harvard. She ran that program for 25 years. And, you know, I've taken tests online, be like, do you have ADHD? You know, and like little BuzzFeed quizzes or whatever it was. And I'm always like, yeah, okay, I do. But she's like, here, I'm going to ask you more specific questions. And she diagnosed me, but she actually was amazed at how I'm able to create the serotonin that I need from running. So in the morning I go out and I run 10 kilometers and I, you know, it's not obviously video, but I could sit here and scroll through the notes that I make on a 10K run. I will be running at a fairly decent pace and making notes like, okay, here's what I need to do in my day. I got to do this, 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 and this. And I do Zoom calls while running. I do, if I know I don't have to talk and I can just listen, you know, or if I know there's going to be breaks, then, you know, so that's kind of a way that I quickly realized. And I didn't know that that's why I was running the amount I was. And I would feel terrible on days I couldn't run. So me injured was just a bad scenario, you know, like for everyone. It was like, you know, what's wrong with this guy? And so I quickly realized that's how I was kind of managing my ADHD. So she actually said, you know, like, oh, you're an expert on self-medicating or like non-medicated ADHD. So she definitely threw it out there. How about we try some medication? And I tried some different things and it didn't really work. And so now I'm just kind of back to managing it myself and using movement. But it's tough because I definitely get those times where, you know, like I'll post photo, and not as much anymore, but like I'd post runs on Strava and I'd feel like every day I need to be feeding that machine. Like people are going to be looking and, you know, checking to see like, oh, he didn't do a run today. He must be injured. Or he, you know, maybe he can't run, you know, like I'm putting these thoughts, projecting these thoughts into people's heads. Like, you know, when really at the end of the day, nobody's thinking that. Right. But in my head, I'm like, you know, I'll see somebody goes out and runs a 34K run around the reservoir. And I'll be like, oh man, that guy's running the same race as me. I need to go out and I need to do 34 kilometers. Or I'll go do Bannett Peak Traverse, which is 30 kilometers, but with 3,500 meters elevation gain. And I'll see somebody did 40 kilometers in the city. And I'm like, oh man, I got to go for another run. I got to get to 40 kilometers. And I just, just had this unhealthy drive for running. And it's good, you know, in talking with Dr. Brock there, like she definitely got me kind of focused on myself, you know, and just realizing like, you know, be happy with what you do and don't worry about having to just show this presence for people that really aren't worried about it. You know what I mean? Like it's, yeah. So that's kind of where I've been learning here in the last little bit. And it's been nice. It's been a good change. And, you know, obviously understanding myself now has given me a little bit of chance to relax and just be who I am.
So that's really interesting, Patrick. So I find it interesting that you were quote diagnosed quite late in life. So, you know, labels, I have a son that, you know, I've resisted labeling for a long time, but he's exactly like me. We all need to move. You know, he had the bouncy chair in kindergarten and we just learned that we both need to move to burn that off, whether we call that ADHD or, you know, and there is value in recognizing maybe your diagnosis, but I want to loop back to the Strava thing. So you talked about, you know, somebody on our show in the past, who was it, Carolyn, that said comparison is the thief of joy, right? When it comes to Strava. And I've had this love-hate relationship with Strava for so long. I've been on it. I've been off it. When I find it influences how I think and how I run, I go off. And, you know, I'm wondering, you said you kind of came over that. Are you still on Strava? Like, how have you, you know, reconciled your relationship with running social media?
I do maybe a little bit. It's funny. I get pointed out quite often as that guy that gets kudos, but doesn't give them back, but I won't go look, but I do use it as a self-comparison tool and kind of a tracker more than anything. But, you know, and I have a certain number of people that I follow on there that I can healthily follow and be like, good for you. Like, I'm glad to see you got out, you know, like, so I definitely have a group of close people that I know I'm not going to be like, oh, they did this, I'm going to do this. And yeah, it's weird. I know it almost sounds petty in a way. And, you know, when I say it out loud, I'm like, oh, that doesn't make you a good person, but it's real. I mean, it is something that I have.
It is real.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people can relate to, I care what other people think. Like, that's basically what you're saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that it's this maybe borderline unhealthy care of like how much people think of you or whether they're even thinking of you. And the irony is that probably nobody's even thinking anything about you because they're thinking about themselves, you know.
They can barely keep track of their own training plan, more or less yours. So like,
right,
come on.
Right. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you're the one living in your own head that exactly. is concerned with other people. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, like, I guess one thing, it's a little bit off topic. It's not really running related, but I used to play like men's rec hockey all the time and oil and gas. They'd be, you know, rec tournaments and things like that. And I'd be playing against guys that used to be in the NHL, like former pro hockey players. And I didn't play much growing up. Right. So I wasn't a very good hockey player, but I'd always compare myself to them. And, you know, they'd pass me the puck and I'd miss it. And in my brain, I was like, oh, they're not going to pass to you again. They think you're terrible and they're not going to invite you out to play next time. When really in their heads, they're probably just like, you know, you missed it. Okay. Like on to the next one. Right. Exactly. And I'm actually a customer there. So they're just like, yeah, whatever, it is what it is. But it would drive me crazy. Like I'd be irritated all the time playing hockey because I think that these people had this perception of me that really wasn't there. And it's not again until just the last little bit that I've realized like people aren't sitting there with a microscope on me thinking like, oh, you did this wrong and you did this wrong. But, you know, in team sports, I definitely got that. And that's where running has really been healthy for me, because if I'm not feeling 100%, I'll just go out by myself and I'm only judging, like I'm only responsible for myself and how I feel. Right. And so it's been definitely, that's another area that running's been healthy, is it's just, it gives me that opportunity to go out with a group if I want, or go out by myself and get from it whatever I want. Right. So,
yeah, running is a gift in so many ways. It gives us way more than it takes in energy, I think, on almost every given day. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, with everything you've just shared with us, Patrick, what have you learned about yourself over the last few years of running, racing, exploring, summiting at sunrise? What lessons has the trail taught you?
It's funny, actually, because, you know, like I've heard a lot of people tell me that what I do is inspiring to them. And I've actually had quite a few people that have reached out and shared that with me. And as much as I don't quite understand it in my brain, I always look at it as like, come on, I'm not doing anything that's inspiring. I do find that a lot of people are just looking for motivation. They're looking for that little bit of push. And it's funny because I'll be the first to say, come on, like me doing that inspired you. There's no way. But I remember back to when I could only run 100 meters and I was looking at trip reports from people that were going out and doing long days and how much it inspired me. And it just brings me back to the fact that, yeah, I think trail running's taught me that it doesn't take climbing Everest, but just, you know, getting out and doing things that helps to inspire people.
Let me tell you, your Instagram is very inspiring. Like your pictures from this weekend. Oh my goodness.
I've checked your Instagram out too. Yeah. The photos are amazing, but you put that so perfectly because I think you're very right. You don't have to go and do like climb Everest or do 100 miler in order to inspire people. I think what you did in the very beginning of just, you know, going out and running your 100 meters, which turned into 5K, which turned into 50K, that's just as inspiring. Like taking that first step is just as inspiring as taking the awe-inspiring step that, of course, everyone's going to be inspired by, those really, really big ones. But I think you're quite astute in recognizing that it's just the person who acts on their desire to get fit or, you know, go after a goal that's equally inspiring to anything else. So I love the way you put that. Now, we've spent a little bit of time talking about how you are inspiring to other people, but we're all inspired by other people. So is there anyone that stands out to you as somebody that has been particularly inspiring on your running journey?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime I talk about inspiration, I start off with our trail mom, with Joanna Ford. Ever since I started, like, I think she was one of the first people I got out with. And, you know, whether it's my mental health journey or running or whatever it is, you know, how she ties her shoes, you know, she's always there to help and she's brutally honest. She, you know, you never have to wonder you know, where she's coming from. If you ask her what color the sky is, it's blue, you know, like the, and I appreciate that because I'm very much the same way. And I appreciate people that are like that. You know, Ryan Lacker, I'm obviously one of my best friends. Him and I have been in some situations that I probably don't want to get too far into because my wife might not let me go to the mountains anymore, or, you know, she'll just re-up our life insurance, you know, and I just trust him more than, and I trust him more than anybody, you know, like we know, you know, where our comfort level is, and we don't put each other in situations where we're going to get hurt. Chris Aubrey is a guy that, you know, I trust him with my life, right? He's, anytime I have any questions about running, I mean, like I said, I ran 30 hours with the guy, and we talked the whole time and didn't skip a beat, right? Cool. So, yeah, I think the most inspiring people for me are actually people that I get to spend the most time with too. And you know, like obviously outside of running, like my wife and, you know, my kids, things like that. But yeah, I think I'm blessed in the sense that the people that inspire me the most are the people that I spend the most time with. So.
Sounds like you've won the lottery. Now, we do keep talking about this Joanna Ford. And for anyone interested, if you haven't listened to the podcast that we did with her way back in last August, almost a year ago, it's episode 98. And it was a really, really good one. It's been downloaded quite a lot. And she's somebody that that's super cool that you get to, you know, hang out with her on the regular. So,
yeah. Yeah, you know, she's done some big things, but she's definitely impacted a lot of people.
My number one goal is more downloads than Joanna Ford. So.
Game on, man. All right. So this has been a really interesting conversation, Patrick. When you know, look forward, what do you look forward to most when you think about running adventures in the future for you?
I think the thing that I'm looking forward to the most is just my 10-year-old. He's starting to get more into running. He likes to run. I mean, he's not quite there distance wise yet, but he actually is starting to take some interest in it. And my 5-year-old just wants to climb all the mountains. So just finding ways to incorporate them, at an earlier age. So they're not waiting until, what was I, 28 years old to finally get, comfortable enough to take that leap. I mean, just, you know, I have incorporated them significantly into my day-to-day, but like just taking them to the next level and just trying to build that comfort level with them and just, you know, be inspirations of their own. Right. So, yeah. And obviously I think this year is going to be an adventure year for me. And then I'm probably going to start looking at, potentially getting back into the race thing for next season. So I just, I want to take this year just and be a little bit selfish as far as, you know, climbing some mountains that I've always wanted to climb. And just getting kind of back into the racing thing next season.
Earning those summit Pepsis.
Yeah, there's so many summits to have Pepsis on. I tell you, it's unlimited. Okay, so we like to end every episode with a few rapid fire questions. We haven't always been doing that lately, but we really kind of want to get back into it because it's fun. So we're going to ask you 5 questions. Give us the first thing that comes to your mind. And the first one is, what is your favorite running mantra?
I don't know. For some reason, just do it. Like the Nike slogan came in my head. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know. That's weird. I honestly haven't put much thought into that. I think, yeah, that's, I don't really have a mantra. I guess my biggest thing is, you know, I'm the type of person that doesn't do anything unless I'm putting all my heart into it. So I guess that would be my mantra is just, you know, it's not a wasted day if you've done it with heart. So I guess that is my mantra.
Okay. Do you have a favorite place to run?
Oh yeah. Anywhere in the Elbow Valley. I mean, that's, kind of the place I feel most at home.
And it is a beautiful valley. Some of my favorite runs are there as well. Okay. Which is why I bought a house as close to it as I blink and could.
There you go.
Okay. You have a favorite bucket list plate, like race or, you know, thing, adventure, multi-day fast pack, place you know, project you'd like to do.
Definitely. I think Assiniboine is one of them. You know, I got to get a little bit more comfortable in the mountaineering side, do some courses on that end. I think that would probably be it. You know, kind of running in from the Shark side, doing Assiniboine and back down. Race-wise, I think it would be something like Hard Rock would definitely be something that I'd love to do. I just, I don't do enough qualifying races to get in, but one day maybe I will. So yeah.
So you're trying to get more downloads than Joanna Ford and you're trying to beat her Hard Rock time? Is this what I'm hearing?
No, we don't do that. I would love to be able to run Hard Rock with Joanna. That would be a good, so.
Nice.
Maybe she'll pace me.
Okay. Yes, I'm sure she would. Do you have a favorite running book or movie?
Yeah, The Cane Scrambles, The Canadian Rockies. Is that a running book? I don't think it is. But I would say, or I think there's actually a mountain running book with a bunch of mountain running trails and stuff that was really good. I think that would probably be it. But I definitely, that's how was part of my inspiration. I used to just read through that book. And
oh, that's unique. Not a lot of people mention that. So I love it. Okay, final question. What is your favorite post run indulgence or mountaineering indulgence?
Oh, Slurpee. Yeah, absolutely. I will. It's actually, you talk about the struggle thing. I mean, one of the keys to a day out with me is hopefully I don't start thinking about the Slurpee too early on a long day, because it can be an awfully long day if I get into that. So I gotta kind of hold off how long it takes me to think about the post run Slurpee. Yeah. I mean, that's a given. You can lock that answer in. So, yeah.
So you really are a 10-year-old at heart.
That's like, what I was great. Just going to say. That's consistent with your 10-year-old diet.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this has been great, Patrick. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your experiences, and your running journey with us. You are exactly why Inspired Souls exists. So thanks for coming on the show. And we look forward to watching some of your adventures throughout the summer and some of your summit photos at sunrise. Where, if some of our listeners wanted to follow along, where could they find you?
Yeah, at Seymour Runs on Instagram is probably the best place. And you know, Patrick James Seymour, Facebook, I use that every once in a while, but I'd say probably Instagram is the best spot. So I don't usually tag where I go, but if you message me, I'll usually tell you, but I try not to throw it out there where I go all the time. So.
Yeah. You know what? That's, that's something I've learned, is some of the best spots are the secret ones. So follow along. His photos are stunning. This weekend's adventures just make me drool. I was stuck at work all weekend and serious FOMO here as to where you adventured. So thank you for coming on the show, and we wish you all the best in your running adventures.
Thanks so much.